Golf Smarter, number 641, is brought to you by Peter Millar Golf. Stay tuned to hear how you can get complimentary shipping and a free golf cap at petermillar.com/golfsmarter. That's Millar, M-I-L-L-A-R, petermillar.com/golfsmarter. Payne Stewart had his greatest year of putting with a Seymour putter. Their brilliant design will help you too, with CEO Jim Grunberg.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Jim.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well. I am so impressed. You are your own trivia question. I'm like, some people get to be trivia questions, but you get to be a trivia question of a phenomenal trivia sports moment.
My 15 seconds of fame.
Well,
15 minutes.
Four and a half minutes or something. You were intimately involved in The Play, which is the classic razzle dazzle from the Cal Stanford game.
The band is on the field.
The band is on the field. You tell me, tell us that story. That's so incredible.
No, it is pretty incredible. I you know, my passion growing up was sports, and I loved everything about playing sports and actually even watching and listening to sports. And so, you know, back in the days of the transistor radio, I had my favorite play-by-play announcers. And fast forward, when I got to Stanford University, I actually had a guy across the hall from me in my freshman dorm that said he had just gone and signed up to be a student radio broadcaster. And I said, really? And I said, that sounds fun. So I went and signed up. And my freshman year, I did regular sort of 30-second and one-minute sports radio broadcasts. And that led to doing some play-by-play for football and basketball, or basketball and baseball, I guess. And then became the sports director of the student radio station at Stanford, which is KZSU.
Yeah.
And
overachievers. So everyone at Stanford, overachievers.
Oh, my
God. You got to
so
be.
So by my junior and senior year, I was heavily involved in doing play by play, and it was just fantastic. And so, of course, I was at Stanford from 1979 until 1983, which would have been the 79 until the 82 football seasons, four football seasons. And if you look back, Stanford was not really a football powerhouse. They'd won the Rose Bowl twice in the early 70s, but by the late 70s, you know, a 500 season was kind of about the best we ever hoped for. And so there in 1982, my senior year, we were in the midst of a sort of another ho-hum 500 season. But every one of our games had national significance because we had John Elway as quarterback.
Right.
And he was already been recognized as one of the great college quarterbacks of all time, carrying the team on his shoulders, you know, scoring 45 points. And would that be enough? And very exciting team to watch. And so, you know, you're in the Bay Area, and I know our listeners are around the world, but in the Bay Area at the end of the year, even if it's not relevant anywhere else, the Stanford-Cal game is a huge rivalry game.
Huge.
They call it the big game.
Yep.
And so there we were at Cal, and it was the last game of the season. And, ironically, a bowl game was on the line for Stanford, but it was certainly a secondary bowl. And but more importantly, the game was that game. I mean, we have to beat Cal, and Cal has to beat us. So, you know, it was a crazy game, and exciting as always, you know, full house. Now, the Stanford student radio station did not get the best spot in the press box. So the funniest part about this whole thing is that we were actually not even in the press box. We were on top of the press box. So we went through.
Oh, my God, that's really high up at Cal.
We took a ladder to get to the top. Through a hole in the ceiling, and we set up our card table, and we had our wires and our electronics. And back then, we broadcast, you know, through a phone, which then the phone went into this box and got amped up and ramped up. And then back at the studio, somebody else on the other end, you know, was you know, turning some knobs to bring the volume up and what have you. So we broadcast that game from the top of the press box,
and you know
it. It was exciting, and it went down to a fantastic final drive that John Elway sort of had, you know, did he have one more in him? And he took the team over 90 yards down the field for a game-winning, so we thought, field goal. Mm-hmm. And there we left, what, 4.5 seconds left, and Cal had this crazy multilateral play with, I might add, one knee on the ground in the middle. But
bitter Stanford
forever,
student.
Yeah, bitter Stanford, exactly. 100% of Stanford fans saw the knee on the ground, and 100% of Cal fans saw that it wasn't. So
yep.
Anyway, after many laterals and ultimately a couple of knocked over band members, I mean, it just turned out to be the zaniest, craziest play. But at the time, we knew it was unbelievable, right?
Yeah,
but,
well,
but
you
isn't it funny?
I just watched the video.
Years later,
yeah.
Isn't it funny that 35, 40 years later, I mean, that play's never going to go away.
And it's a, like, nobody knows that you were associated with it, right? The people you work with, does anybody know that?
Yeah.
It's like, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's just kind of it's something in my past. I mean, occasionally it has, you know, I think once, you know, somebody finds out and what have you. But yeah, I think there's probably people that I work with on a regular basis that have no idea. It's just kind of a fun little trivia fact, as you said.
Phenomenal. Well, thank you for sharing that. I watched it before we recorded, and I just couldn't believe it. It was so, especially that you called Stanford winning it, and all of a sudden there's this long pause.
No.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't need to go there farther anymore. All right, so let's talk about putters.
Okay.
let's go
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Let's see why we're here. Seymour putters. I've had my eye on Seymour putters for a long time because I'm a center shafted putter guy. I've always liked that. I don't like blades. I like mallets. And so I've always kind of like, ooh, what is that? And it's mainly because this development of RST, the rifle scope technology that you guys created, that made the Seymour putter so successful. Tell me how that was developed.
Yeah, and it, in fact, rifle scope technology is what we now call the very prominent alignment system that's on the back heel top of the putter. So you'll see two white lines and a red dot, and we have a broad selection of different styles right now, but mm-hmm. pretty much they're all going to be defined by what we call that rifle scope alignment technology. And really, the putter was created in the late 90s. It was created up in the Bay Area by Jim Weeks and his brother Mark Weeks. They tried to solve the universal problem that all golfers have with putting, which is trying to get the alignment and the speed right. So they created a putter that was very, very simple, and it would help the golfer control the setup, really work on even posture. And then the design of it, pretty much the putter will swing itself on a natural arc path that's square to the plane at all times, and actually the putter head will be delivered back to the ball with the same loft every time because of this system using a sort of a neutral straight up and down shaft. So it takes away, not only does it help the golfer align the putt in the right direction, but the same amount of force will produce the same amount of rollout every time, which isn't the case with a forward press, because a forward press, time after time, as it starts to change just slightly, which it always does, it changes the loft of the putter, which will change the amount that a ball will roll out, even with the same amount of force applied. So it kind of, in a genius way, solved those two issues. So of course, there's a million, you know, new putter designs created in basements and garages every year. But right then and there, almost immediately, the putter, you know, kind of came out of the development process in 1998. And at the end of the 1998 season, the brothers found somebody to go take this putter out to the tour, because that's the way it's always been.
Always.
Is there anybody out there that would be willing to give this a try? And one of the very first players to adopt it was Payne Stewart. And Payne Stewart was coming off of a four-year stretch where he had not won on the PGA Tour. And he went into the 1999 season as a total free agent when it came to his equipment. He'd had a couple of equipment deals, but he said, you know what, I've got one more great run in me. I think I can do this, but I don't want to be tied down by any sort of equipment contract. So he went into the 99 season with a blank staff bag and 14 clubs that he put in that he wanted, and nobody was going to pay him to do it, and nobody was going to tell him what to use. And incredibly enough, sort of the last piece of the puzzle was the putter. And I think the first tournament of the year that he came out for was the Pebble Beach Invitational. And it was there that he spent a little bit of time with the guy that had gone out to sort of test the waters with the Seymour putter. And his name was Arnie Cunningham. And he's a longtime sort of a equipment rep out there. And so he ended up having a conversation with Payne Stewart and Payne Stewart's caddy, Mike Hicks, who is still a PGA Tour caddy and one of the best of all time. And they said that Payne was struggling with his consistently not being set up the same way. And Mike said that, you know, Payne, you know, he had a little bit of a forward press and he was using sort of a traditional sort of a plumber's neck, you know, offset putter. And he said, gosh, from putt to putt, they both realized that, you know, he wasn't hitting his lines because he felt like he wasn't even set up the right way every time and the same way every time. So he was very, very intrigued. He set the Seymour putter down. You know, he sort of forward pressed it a little bit, and all of a sudden he was looking at the red dot, which you're supposed to hide. And he said, oh, I understand this. Okay. He pulled it back into more of a neutral position. It squared up his eyes. It squared up his shoulders. Believe it or not, he just putted constantly with it on the Wednesday, the day before the tournament. And very rarely will a tour player actually first come in contact with something and then practice with it the day before an event and put it into play. But that's what he did, and he won the event. And it was his first win in 4 years. So, and having done that, you know, he went on to actually lead the entire PGA Tour in putting that year.
Wow.
He went on to have what most still consider to be the greatest final round putting performance in the history of major championships. 24 putts in the final round at Pinehurst.
Wow.
The longest putt ever to win a U.S. Open. And, of course, you know, one of the most iconic, memorable scenes in the history of golf. I mean, Payne Stewart jumping into his caddy's arms, Mike Hicks, and, right, you know, Phil Mickelson heading off to have a baby the next day, and, you know, the oh my call from Dick Enberg. I mean, it's still, you know, one of the most chilling moments in the history of golf. And it was a Seymour putter. So, I mean, how could it get any better than that? And then, you know, of course, tragically, when, you know, Payne's loss 3 months later, I think really took a brand from being maybe possibly the next big thing to all of a sudden, whoa, you know, you know, the ramp up was just starting. And then I think the guys that had started this brand, as I mentioned, the two golf professionals, I think they, you know, it was just an awkward, you know, horrible, you know, tragic sort of situation. And so the brand was associated with Payne, and all of a sudden he's gone. So just like that, the brand sort of got dry docked.
Wow.
And, you know, so probably 6 years later, my partner and I went out and, you know, we'd always just been completely fascinated by the simplicity of the technology and how instantly beneficial it seemed to be for most golfers. So we went out and we just kind of sought out the brand, and we were able to acquire it from.
And you were in the golf industry? You were in the golf industry at that time?
I had been in the golf industry at the time. Okay. I'd been in the golf industry at the time. I was just winding up my time with actually with the Odyssey brand. This was the late 90s. So it was June of 1999, and Callaway had made a decision to kind of take Odyssey, which was a division that I ran for them, and just kind of turn it into a product line. So for me to kind of, there really was no longer a role as the general manager of a company because the company was sort of going away. So, but I, at that exact time, interestingly enough, my partner and I now who owns Seymour, you know, we watched that like everybody else. And we just kept going back to that saying, you know, there was this visibly different product that, you know, was affiliated with, you know, one of the greatest performances in history. And we just kept, you know, wondering. Several years later, we decided, well, let's maybe try and get back and have a go at this again. And we just kept coming back to Seymour. And the more research we did, the more we found out that while it wasn't actively being marketed, it wasn't actively available in the shops, we were amazed at how many great young players, you know, kind of post-Payne Stewart, over those years in the early 2000s had actually put a Seymour putter in play and wouldn't give it up for anything. And so the fan loyalty, the user loyalty was off the charts. And, you know, so that's we started doing more and more research. We went and talked to Mike Hicks, who at the time was, you know, he told us the story and told us the story about Payne Stewart. And we met another guy named Pat O'Brien, who was actually had been a good friend of Payne Stewart's. He'd gone on to become the next tour rep for Seymour. And based on his friendship with Payne Stewart, he thought this was a putter that everybody could benefit from. And lo and behold, he went out and put it in two young players' hands on the mini tours named Zach Johnson and Vaughn Taylor. And both of them fully adopted the product and the simple system that Pat believed in, that he thought it was kind of behind the fact that Payne got great, because it was a technology that was very, very simple to use, but still sort of needed a fitter and an instructor to sort of help, you know, help put it in play. And Pat O'Brien, who's now the director of golf at the prestigious Lakewood Country Club in Dallas, Texas, put it in the hands of Zach Johnson and Vaughn Taylor. And both of them went on to make the Ryder Cup team in 2006 as rookies based on the strength of their putting. Both of them were in the top amongst it. So that was the time that my partner and I finally went out and acquired the Seymour brand. We had, it was the number one putter used by the, you know, in the Ryder Cup in 2006, if you can believe that. And so, you know, by two guys that hadn't had a tour rep really look after them in years. But when I met with them, they basically said, hey, gosh, would love to have you, you know, hopefully you acquire this brand and hopefully you turn it into great things. But if nothing else, could you take about 50 of them and lock them up so we'll know that they'll always be there? I mean, what type of brand loyalty is that from tour players? Wow. Who both have gone on to, at some point or another, been, you know, the best putters on tour. So pretty interesting stuff.
So what is the record of Seymour putters winning majors and PGA Tour events and LPGA
well,
Tour events?
Well, you know, Zach Johnson's gone on and won $44 million using a Seymour putter. I mean, there's a guy that wasn't even ranked in the top 1,000 in the world when he first put it in play, right? And, you know, was an overachiever. And still, you know, the little bulldog, the, you know, the great short game, you know, the guy that has just got the strongest will to win. And, you know, he's gone on to be, you know, very quietly one of the best players of his generation, with 12 PGA Tour wins and a Masters and a British Open at Augusta and St. Andrews. So also one of the best singles records in Ryder Cup. I believe he's won his last five singles matches in the major cup events. So pretty spectacular there. And, you know,
it's the best testimony you can possibly have.
Under the most pressure, exactly. So, you know, under the pressure of major championships and Ryder Cups, and, you know, when he gets in and when he's been in contention. So he's had an unbelievable career. And, you know, and there's other great stories. I mean, Ernie Els put it in play the week after he six putted at Augusta. So this was in 2000 and was it 16, I believe. And, you know, I don't know if you remember that, but most people remember that, you know, on the very first hole of the Masters, he just really, really all of a sudden, the wheels sort of came off the track. And, you know, he went into shock for a couple of days and the world went into shock. But the next week he put a Seymour putter in play at Harbortown for the Heritage and he led the field in putting. So, and he went on to use the Seymour putter for 15 months. And over that 15-month stretch was the second best statistical putter on the PGA Tour behind Jason Day. So this was Ernie Els. So now, you know, he was in contention three or four times. You know, he's obviously, most people would say, past the normal prime, you know, playing years on the PGA Tour. But, you know, people don't realize how great he was. And, you know, so that's a great story. And Brant Jobe on the Champions Tour. I want to say he had played over 400 events on the PGA Tour and the Champions Tour and what is now the Web.com Tour without a win. put a Seymour putter in play last year. And I want to say his three of his first four events were top 25. And then his fifth event was in Des Moines, and he won. And it was his first win ever on one of the PGA Tours. So there's been some great stuff. I mean, we don't pay players. We don't really advertise. We're really a word-of-mouth type of brand. But it's always great when you get that level of validation.
Absolutely. Well, you can be a word-of-mouth brand when you have tour players succeeding with it, because nothing mm-hmm. sells golf equipment more than a tour player who has charisma and appeal and a couple wins.
Yeah. And so that's kind of at the foundation. But I'll tell you, what's really more rewarding to me is just how the word of mouth has spread to golfers of all skill levels. Because, you know, the putting green is sort of it can be the great equalizer. And putting, you know, people, you know, you take the highest amount of strokes on the putting green. It's the one area that most golfers, even those that are inclined to take lessons and typically get fit for their equipment, putting is sort of the last frontier, right? So there's not a lot of instructors that feel comfortable giving putting lessons and doing putter fittings. So Seymour's really been out at the forefront since the day my partner and I acquired the brand 12 years ago. We've been at the forefront of saying that, yes, the Seymour putter is a putter and it's a system. It needs to be fit. We want you to understand the theory behind it. And then whether you use all of it or just a little bit of it, it's really cool in the way it will connect you with your fitter, your instructor, or just, you know, Seymour itself. I mean, you know, the information that we have available through our service team, through our website, through anything that we're willing to share. And so the really cool thing is how many players contact us and they have their career best rounds, their career best years. They win a club tournament. They're part of a member guest. They're, you know, at every level, right? And junior golfers, you know, junior golfers, of course, are very, very influenced by advertising and, you know, who spends the most money. So, of course, there's brands out there that, you know, that I think are sort of the bandwagon brands, and they're fantastic too. But, you know, the really neat thing is that more and more of these sort of we've got this network of what we call the Seymour Putter Institute instructors, those instructors that we've put through our training programs, and many of them are running massive junior programs in the summers and strongly suggesting, recommending fitting the Seymour putters for those juniors. So we love the fact that we're penetrating and helping golfers at the junior level become comfortable. So, you know, having said all of that, you know, the funny thing about putting is, of course, because it has to be so precise to be great. You know, nobody ever feels like they're putting as well as they should, right?
Sure, of course.
I mean, so, you know, why aren't I putting better? And it always comes back to, you know, well, first of all, every single putt is different. You know, they're uphill, they're downhill, they're side hill, the grass is different. The grass on this golf course is different than the one you played yesterday. And so, and you have no margin of error. I mean, a great drive is any drive that's in the fairway, which could be many, many yards wide, right? And a great approach shot is one that hits the green. But I mean, a putt, if it doesn't go into the cup, I mean, it hasn't been successful. So it's really fun. The putter, and I think putting in general, now finally the world is realizing that, wow, why wouldn't I take the time to really invest in a good putter and one that's right for me, and then stay at it. You know, it's nothing comes easy.
Right. A putter is for life. You know, I mean, like a driver, you're going to change every couple of years because of the technology, and even your irons are going to change because of aging, you know, and you need to change your shafts or whatever.
Yep.
But a putter, I would think a putter is a club, is a tool that you want to, once you get comfortable with your putter, that's it. You're not changing anything.
And you're right. You know, it's funny because there are a certain number of golfers out there, a smaller percent, who realize that, you know, the longer they're with a putter that they love, you know, the overall, the better it is to them, right? I mean, it is. It's a long-term relationship. And it's because the benefit then of having that putter over the long term is that you now, when your putting is off, okay, you can say, well, I know it's not the putter, because this putter has worked so many times for me. I'm not going to change the putter because now I'm changing multiple variables. So I'm going to stick with this putter, you know, through thick or thin. And then I'm going to focus on some of these other things. I mean, what's happened is, you know, am I seeing the lines different? I mean, is it just something about that I'm not getting used to this, the grass? And so again, when you're trying to hit the right speed and the right line, when you're constantly changing putters, you throw another variable into the mix. And I see on tour so many tour players that are trying to catch lightning in a bottle, changing every week because they can. And I think they're just really hurting themselves in terms of their potential to play their best because they just keep throwing new variables in. So, And when you have a putter, particularly a putter like ours with a lasting, proven, common sense technology, you know, then the people that put our putters in play, the brand loyalty is tremendous. But having said that, I felt like, well, maybe once they buy one of our putters and they love it so much, I mean, that's it. We'll never hear from them again. We'll never see them again. But remember, there's the other side of the golfer that just loves new things and new equipment. And you want to have fun, right? And so the cool thing is that we have many, many players that collect Seymour putters. And while half of me says, gosh, I feel bad that they're not happy with what they have. But then when you actually do the research and talk to them, oh, no, I love Seymour. I have 9 of them, you know. And so it's great to build a product that consumers have such passion and loyalty for.
Amazing. Hey, listen, I need to take a break right now. Are you familiar with Peter Millar golf clothes?
Fantastic. I know that my sons, who are both in their early 20s and scratch golfers, that's their brand.
And it's probably because of comfort and style.
I think it's because exactly. Yeah, and trust me, I've got a couple and I love them too. So, yeah, it's a great brand.
Yeah, well, Peter Millar was founded in 2001, just with a single cashmere sweater, and has grown to be a premium American lifestyle brand featuring a wide range of casual sportswear, tailored menswear, and luxury performance golf apparel. And that's pretty much all I wear, and that's why I love my Peter Millar shirt, because this performance sports shirt is so comfortable and comes out of the wash perfectly. But I'll tell you, the long sleeve shirt that I got from Peter Millar is the most comfortable shirt that I've ever owned. It looks great. My wife has asked me to go back and get some more of them, so I'm definitely going to be buying that. And just, I just love that they're sponsoring the podcast.
And are you gonna outfit my wardrobe with some Peter Millar?
Oh, I think we should. And you know, if all you have to do is go to petermillar.com/golfsmarter. Check out some of my Peter Millar favorites and just use that link, petermillar.com/golfsmarter. Millar is M-I-L-L-A-R. And check it out. You'll get complimentary shipping and a free hat.
That's awesome. I know I will never turn down an invitation to play in a golf tournament if that's one of the prizes.
They love that, and so do I. Thank you. Now let's talk a little more about the putters, and I want to the fitting part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what it is to be fit, because you know I was reading different reviews of Seymour putters online, and everyone was raving about them and whatnot. And I just thought it was interesting that like my Golf Spy, it's such an easy to understand. It's so intuitive to put a Seymour putter in your hands and know what to do. And yet he felt like he didn't really understand how to play with it until he watched a DVD. You know, obviously this was a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And I think that's true. I mean, there's no question that I think that, you know, the two things that possibly could be a barrier for somebody maybe being attracted to a Seymour putter is, number one, is they look a little bit different than what a lot of golfers have used, right? Because a lot of golfers have used, if you look at the majority of the putters sold over the last 30 years, they've been blades with hosels, offset hosels, and they've sort of been, you know, larger mallets with bent shafts, okay? And so with that being the framework, then when somebody looks at a blade or a small mallet or even a larger mallet with a center shaft, it tends to be a much smaller universe. And I think, you know, golfers are, maybe they assume that because they haven't seen that design much and that style much, that you know, maybe it's a little harder to use, or maybe it's just for the better players. And really, it's nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, what we like to say is, you know, would you, if you happen to shoot, you know, recreationally, a gun, or if you play tennis, if you play, you know, hockey or what have you, right? I mean, the ball is at the end of the stick, or the ball is at the end of the tennis racket, right? Or, you know, you shoot down a straight line. And so we've always thought that, you know, putters with a lot of offset, you know, in some ways, you know, make it harder to sync up sort of what the brain is waiting for and when the impact actually happens. Okay. And so, you know, when people come to a center shaft putter, we did some research and found out that actually the USGA, there was a period, you know, sort of during the Bobby Jones era where straight center shaft putters were actually deemed to be non-conforming because they were too simple and too easy to use.
Wow.
So, you know, and there's a comeback now, which is kind of cool because that's kind of where we planted our flag. It's always been there. We have grown to offer some options for golfers that are, you know, married to offset or married. So we now have a version of our alignment system that does work for offset. But in general, I'd say 90% of the Seymour putters and 90% of our brand perception is that of a straight center shaft putter. You mentioned yourself that you happen to be somebody who really enjoys a straight center shaft putter.
Yep.
And we see that coming back, and I think it's coming back because it does make a lot of sense. I mean, you know, when the impact point of the ball is right below the shaft.
Exactly.
And it takes a variable away. So there's the simple, besides our alignment system, there's just the simple technology of straight center shaft putters. And the fact that you now can know if it's closed or if it's open, and you can now know if your head is tilted too far back or too far forward because of our optical system. That's just another huge added benefit.
Sure. And it makes some, I just find it funny because I always, again, I've always liked the center shafted because, well, I felt like when I was doing a heel shafted putter that I would have a greater tendency to have miss hits because if I hit off the toe or something, but here
exactly.
I would think that there's less opportunity for miss hits if
there
it's in the center.
And it feels better. It feels better when you hit it in the sweet spot. So when it comes down to the fitting, of course, you know, you need to get somebody on a putting green. The great thing about, about putter fitting is that any of the, you know, the golf shops or golf stores at any of the chain golf stores, or of course, any of the country clubs have greens outside. And some of the new fitting studios are set up with indoor putting greens and what have you. So, you know, you really just need to get somebody and walk them through, you know, in the same way that golfers are now almost universally fit for a driver and in many times fit for a set of irons, the putter fitting can be equally rewarding, if not more rewarding. And most golfers, you know, when you, the putting stroke is, you know, it's a different animal. So, you know, you can get somebody and you can watch the way they swing their club on the range, but not everybody takes some variation of that same swing to the putting green. You go to the putting green and all of a sudden, you know, they've been influenced by things that they've seen or what they thought they saw. And, you know, you've got, you know, different people, you know, trying to do this and
the
do
claw.
That. And yeah. And you've got, you know, and again, when it comes to the cool thing about the Seymour putter is that, you know, as I mentioned, the dynamics is that the putters tend to really swing themselves. And the really cool thing is whether you use left-hand low or right-hand low, or a claw or a saw. I mean, really, all of those types of grips work very, very well with a Seymour putter because, again, we're real neutral, and we want a putting stroke to actually allow the putter's dynamics to work. And so some of those, you know, the thing is that, again, if you're not playing on a regular basis, I think using one of those, you know, more fringe-type grips is going to be more difficult to master. But if somebody wants to take the time and do it, you know, our putters work great with that. In fact, a Seymour putter, you remember the, you know, the belly putter revolution, right?
I mean, of course.
When all of a sudden belly putters, you know, were really the thing. The cool thing is most people came to us and said, hey, your belly putter is almost like a double positive, because really hiding the red dot with a Seymour putter is basically like having a belly putter with an invisible, you know, with an invisible section that extends right to your midsection. Because when you set a Seymour putter down, that's exactly what you're doing. You've basically got a belly putter, but without the anchor part. So, because remember, one of the benefits of the belly putter was that when it was anchored in your gut, you actually would swing the putter on the natural slight arc stroke in which maximum performance is attained. And so, it was straight up and down. There was no forward press, and all, you know, everybody's like, well, hey, the belly putter's taking all the skill out of the game. Well, it doesn't do that, because the skill of putting is figuring out the speed and the line, and, you know, it's too hard. So I was never a believer that, you know, the skill of a game was at risk with a belly or an anchored putter. But one of the cool things was during that era is that a lot of people then first came to Seymour and said, whoa, Seymour putter is, yeah, the red dot is always hidden, even with, so we did sell belly putters, and it was kind of like, well, do you want yours anchored or not anchored? Because at the time it was the same stroke, and it still is the same stroke. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if that makes any sense on radio, I don't know if it does. But, yeah.
There's been a lot of conversation on putters recently about the face insert, right? And because that's pretty much where the feel comes from. That's where the ball is making contact. Tell me about the Seymour putter and their face inserts, what you guys have done.
Yeah, actually, feel more so comes from where the weight is in a putter and where the shaft is in relation. So as I mentioned, if you take a Seymour solid putter, stainless 303, with a shaft that goes in right near the center, you have got the ultimate, because for three reasons. Number one is, without the hosel, the center of gravity is going to be a little bit lower, enhancing feel. Number two is because the shaft goes in right behind where the ball is struck, that enhances the feel, okay? And then, you know, number three is we do have milled face treatments, which again enhance the feel. And in the past, we have some putters with softer face inserts as well. Although, ironically, I'd say the need for a softer face insert is probably becoming less and less as golf balls become softer and softer.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, in the original sort of soft inserts were designed back in the early 90s when two-piece rock golf balls were in vogue, you know, to get that extra distance, right? And nowadays, you know, golf balls have moved towards softer and softer feels. So I think when it comes to the insert, really it's going to be about and what will put the better roll. The insert itself will not put a good roll on the ball. What will put a good roll on the ball is a flat face, which is milled, and then the right angle. You know, in the end of the day, you want to hit the golf ball with around a 2 degree loft and impact. Okay, 1.5 to 2 degrees loft and impact. So, you know, you can get to that in the old days. You know, some of the original ping answer putters, right? Those were originally created when greens were, you know, a 2 on the stimp meter or whatever it was, right? And so, you had to move a ball out, almost out of a depression, and so they needed a lot of loft. And so, you know, a lot of people had the putters with 6-7 degrees worth of loft. Well, as greens got faster and faster and faster, and as golfers, you know, didn't necessarily replace their putters. Well, all of a sudden I'm on a fast green now and I've got 6 or 7 degrees aloft. What do golfers do to get the ball rolling better? They press their hands forward. So the forward press in some ways was just a backwards way of getting into trying to get back towards an optimal loft at impact. But you need sort of two wrongs to make a right. Whereas with a Seymour putter, I mean, it's straight up and down. The face is milled at 2.5 degrees. Just let the putter go back and come back through where it started, and you've got the optimal loft, putting the optimal roll on there, which gives you the optimal feel.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that's been all the rage in putters in the last few years are the grips. That has changed dramatically over the years, too.
No question about it. We had 55 to 60 gram, you know, rubber grips on putters until pretty recently.
Yeah.
And so now there are lighter weight materials, you know, there's different sizes of grips. And so, you know, golfers are, have a huge opportunity to change the dynamics of their putter, the feel of their putter, the performance of their putter by changing grips as well. No question about it. And I think in general, it doesn't necessarily apply for everybody, but I think those larger grips were created to sort of take left out of play if you're a right-handed golfer. I mean, so, you know, I mean, it's sort of, you know, with the smaller grip, you actually release the putter a little bit better. And some people need that. And so we're not necessarily advocates of oversized putter grips for everyone. You have to go out and try it, right? Because, you know, a larger putter grip will make it more difficult to release that putter. Mm. And, you know, some golfers, you know, one notable great golfer with, you know, 14 majors has always talked about releasing the putter, right? And how important that is to put a perfect roll on the ball. And, you know, we believe the same thing when we study it. You know, golfers, you know, if you want to put a perfect roll on a putt, the putter is going to mimic a full swing, but in a much smaller, lesser way. It's going to come slightly to the inside, okay, and then it's going to come through square, and it's going to release slightly back to the inside. And if it doesn't do that, the golfer has a tendency to try and keep the putter on sort of that imaginary straight line back and through. If the golfer's really, really trying to do that, they're standing to the side of the ball, right? And there's an angle on the putter. So to keep a putter on a straight line when I'm standing to the side of it requires a lot of manipulation. As I pull the putter back, I actually have to close it as I draw it back and de-loft it if I want to keep it on that straight line. Well, now to get it back to impact, I have to reverse that motion. So, because now I'm hooded and I'm de-lofted and I'm closed, and so now I have to actually, as I get to the ball, I have to actually be opening it and adding loft to it. Well, that's the last thing you want to do when your putter face hits the ball is be in the process of adding loft and opening it. Putt goes short and goes to the right. So, you know, one of the biggest misnomers in all of golf is this feeling that some people have that there's some sort of a straight back and straight through stroke. Every stroke has to, I mean, go back to the belly putter. When the belly is anchored in one spot, watch what the putter face does. That's the way a putter face is supposed to react during a putt.
Amazing. I'm just so impressed by it. And the more video I look at online, the more I'm intrigued by it. Can't wait to get my hands. I actually went to my local golf shop the other day and pulled out a couple of the different Seymour putters, and just they felt wonderful. I was really, really impressed. Let's talk about the Golf Smarter audience for a minute, because now that you've got them fully interested in wanting to get their hands on a Seymour putter, is there any type of incentive that we would love to create for them to go to Seymour.com? And it's S-E-E-M-O-R-E. It's not like my uncle's name, S-E-Y-M-O-R-E. Seymour. Get it? It's S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Exactly. Seymour of this. Seymour.com. What would you, can you make an offer to the Golf Smarter community, which we, our Golf Smarter community, we call ourselves Golf Martyrs. As opposed to Golf Smarter, it's Golf Martyrs.
Cool.
Yeah. what can they do when they want to make an order? What can they receive from Seymour, if anything? I'm going to put you on the spot here.
No, that's cool. You know, we've never done really anything like that, but at the same time, gosh, we love, you know, it'll be fun to tap into a new audience and see, you know, again, I think there's a lot of golfers out there that will really love what they find. And,
and you're talking to them right now, man.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, go to Seymour.com or, you know, and look at some videos and, you know, figure out, if you've got any questions, you know, give us a shout, info@Seymour.com, call us. We really do pride ourselves on our responsiveness and our customer service. And I think, we would love to just walk you through, via email or, you know, phone conversation, what we think could work for you if you're, you know, if it's not convenient for you. And again, we've got pretty good distribution out there, but if for some reason you wanted to get a hold of us directly and you came on, and you know, we've got just a wealth of opportunities and options and what have you. We'll help you find what you want, and we'll throw a hat or a t-shirt in there, and then you know, if you want to you know, stamp your initials on there, we'll, you know, we'll knock, you know, we'll give you a special price on that as well. I think let's try that. I mean, we've never done anything like that, but I have no issues. I think it'd be a lot of fun. So again, Seymour.com has got a lot of information on there. If you take some time, you can watch some videos and you can see some stuff from Pat O'Brien and from some of our other instructors about how the system and the product works. And it's very intuitive. So I think typically once you start watching that, you realize, you know, that does make sense. And I think really we're nothing without just, you know, customer loyalty and support and friendships. And, you know, that's our goal. Turn every customer into a friend.
Well, that's very generous. So if you do go to Seymour.com and start the conversation or even make an order right off the site, make sure that you tell them you're a Golf Smarter listener. Make sure they're aware of that, and you can either get a hat or a shirt, right, from Seymour Putters, or and if you want to have your initials stamped, how cool is that? I love that idea. Have your initials stamped on the
custom
putter.
Paint fill.
And
we'll do that for $25.
Oh,
so
wow,
that's less than the normal price.
Oh, that's it's very generous, very kind.
Let's give it a shot.
And once you do, audience member. Once you do make that purchase, please write back to me. Let me know, and I'll tell Jim how you feel about the putter. Would love to do it. Jim, that I really enjoyed the education and your history. thank you so much for your time and for being on Golf Smarter.
Fred, it's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it and look forward to staying in touch.
I had an epiphany over the weekend about our Golf Smarter Academy. I realize that not everyone is comfortable getting their voice in the podcast. I get that. And I'm sorry if I put you in an uncomfortable position by wanting to do it. So in addition to calling our toll-free line at 415-761-1498, I want to encourage you to simply email me your question and I will read it to our Academy instructor and still get you some free expert advice. Okay? Is that okay? Great. I think that's just the best way to do it. Send me your question. There's a couple ways to do it. Simply click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com. Use @golfsmarter on Twitter. It'll get to me. Or just write to me directly. My email address is fred@golfsmarter.com. 1, 2, 3. It's that simple. And I really look forward to hearing your questions so we can get you some answers and a Golf Smarter diploma and a Golf Smarter ball marker and any other thing we can pull out of our bag of tricks. So, before I go, though, let me urge you, do not buy golf balls until you hear next week's episode. I'm going to say this again because I turned your head. Make it louder. Do not buy golf balls until you hear next week's episode. Our guest is going to be Sam Hogan, partner at twoguyswithballs.com. Yeah, that's what I said. Twoguyswithballs.com sells used golf balls at a fraction of the cost of new balls. And in our conversation, we'll tell you how to get additional savings because you're a Golf Smarter listener. And it's not exclusive to you. Tell every one of your friends to check this one out. Not only will we learn the definition of a used golf ball, he'll share the difference between the different types of balls to play and which is the best for your game. This is one of those episodes that can change your golf life for the better because you're spending less and still getting to play. Okay? Next week, twoguyswithballs.com. And if, again, you have any questions, comments, suggestions, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com or send an email directly to me, fred@golfsmarter.com.